Welcome to the Shift Happens podcast, where we explore the latest trends and insights in the digital workplace. From the role of AI in the workplace to the future of remote work, we cover it all. Tune in as we chat with industry leaders and experts. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just getting started in the digital landscape, we've got you covered. Subscribe to Shift Happens wherever you listen to podcasts and stay ahead of the curve.
Shift Happens podcast.
Welcome to the Shift Happens podcast, where we explore the latest trends and technologies transforming the future of work. Joining us today is Richard Harbridge, Chief Technology Officer at Two2Lead. He's a Microsoft MVP and also an AvePoint community champion. Richard has deep expertise in helping organizations adopt emerging technologies to drive business outcomes. Be prepared to lead the change as Richard dives deep into expert insights on how Copilot and other AI tools can boost productivity, enhance quality, and transform collaboration. Since I've known you, that's where your passion lies. It's really looking at not only what the forefront of technology is, but more importantly, how you help customers, how you help people effectively adopt it. Do you think that's rooted somewhere when you're growing up or going to school, that there's just this innate desire to tinker and figure out, but more importantly, help others to maximize it?
Absolutely, right? Because everyone has different motivators, right? So I've always challenged myself, if I feel like things are becoming too easy, then I'm not growing. And one of the things that you realize, especially the first time you engage with communities or customers, right, if you're in a consulting role, professional services, you realize that people can teach you a lot, but not everyone can teach you the same level. And so, you know, you start searching for those people who just know more than you about X or Y. You want to be the dumbest person in the room on the subjects that you're trying to learn. And that's what drives my interest in, you know, professional services, because I like to help customers, because many of my customer CIOs, as an example, are way smarter than I am on certain patterns. I learn from them, and then I get to basically use that knowledge to help somebody else, right? And if I'm constantly challenging that, it always develops me. And so AI has been really exciting for that, because while employee experience has kind of gradually changed, and there's been some really interesting stuff post-pandemic, like an acceleration there, what I've seen in AI just dwarfs everything in my past. Like, I've never had anything like this where it feels like every day, and they're not little learnings. Like, I'm learning like really substantially interesting things where I'm like, this will change how I communicate on X, or it'll change how I, you know, help over on Y. And so, you know, exposure and putting yourself in situations where you can learn opportunistically, I think is really important. So obviously community is a big play on that in my own experiences, but you can even do that in a larger organization where there's just a lot of diversified opinions, diversification of like perspectives, and that also can help you. So yeah, wherever you can find it, I think is important. But for me, it's, you know, community for sure is number one. And number two is the nature of my work, right? I get to do a lot of strategy meetings with customers, and you have to know a lot before you jump in that room. And then when you're in that room, again, other people are smarter than you. So it's really fun to, like, you know, learn from other people, other MVPs or other, you know, customer experts on subjects.
I mean, Rich, you and I have known each other for what, over, I would say, 15 years now. And we've gone through a lot of these shifts in technology, right? So, you know, back in the day, you talked about SharePoint Saturday. SharePoint was the thing. And then there's the cloud, and there's Teams, and certainly now AI. And you mentioned something interesting. You said AI is dramatically different. You're learning something new. So give me an example. Like, what's the one thing you've learned recently that is like a mind-blowing thought that, wow, this will change the game?
Look, I think, first, I think there's no change like this for this pace of the change. Like, I was lucky enough to be in my career when internet started to really take off. And, you know, that was really exciting. But it took like years of transformation time, right, before that really impacted people to the level that we're seeing here. I would argue maybe even a decade plus. But now I'm seeing that in months, like very short time frames, which is just really exciting. A little stressful, but exciting nonetheless, exhilarating and terrifying. The other piece to it, though, you know, to your point on the learnings, one of my favorite ones, so you know me, I've always loved like the human element, right? So you have people and you have processes and you have technology. I always find that the people and the processes around adoption, especially adopting new technology, has always been a really interesting space. And I felt pretty confident, right? Because I've spent almost 20 years like doing adoption talks at conferences, you know, designing campaigns with customers, like, you know, just being really excellent there. And one of the things that we learned more recently, and this is a really interesting one with Copilot, is the best adoption technique with Copilot for, you know, scaling is to create teams that nominate. So we did something similar back in the day with Yammer and things like that, where you would get people to self-nominate and then they would give, like, it's like whitelisting. So you give a reason to use a technology and then we invite you in and then you come in. Instead of who's hot or Ryan Reynolds, Ryan Gosling being in the top of that, you know, Yammer pool, we would have these really good business discussions. But what's different now is instead of focusing on like champions and stakeholders, all really important stuff like centers of excellence, what we do is we say like it's about teams. So with Copilot and AI, it's teams of people, three or more, and they learn these technologies together, right? Because they have a shared interest, a shared set of processes and patterns, lowercase p processes that they have to deal with. And those things that they're tackling, they're learning how to use Copilot interactively with one another as well as individually in that collective setting. And so what we find is the simple technique of changing the approach where nomination isn't in whitelisted, where you have individuals, but you have teams of three or more nominating, both help soften because everyone wants Copilot. Like, give me Copilot. And then, you know, as a business, you're like, well, our guiding principle is that everyone will have equal access to AI because it's, you know, a competitive differentiator. It's, you know, important for everyone. We'll give everyone Copilot, but Copilot for Microsoft 365, because there's a cost, we will give to those who need it most. That kind of falls apart if you're just selecting, you know, hand selecting people based on, you know, their digital signals, like they're amazing super workers, like super collaborators. Yeah. So if you instead do that in parallel with this like team-based nomination process, it allows for really great scaling, you know, rolling pilot almost, where your core pilot journey, you might get, you know, 30, 40% of them will be those hand-selected people, but then another 60% will be these teams of people. And then that 60% keeps growing and growing and growing during the pilot, actually, because there's nothing blocking you from bringing them on. A group of users say, we have this need. You're like, that's a pretty good, compelling need. Why not license those users, right? Like bring them in the middle of the pilot. And so what we're finding is that team dynamic is really critical because when you do surveys, I don't need to ask everyone in the team. I can just get like one response from the team. Or if I'm doing coaching and mentoring, I don't need to scale that to every individual. I can just say, hey, your team, I'd love, you know, you to join as many of you can. We'll record it. And then they'll percolate and share that, grow that within the team and understanding. And it, the list goes on and on. And it's so funny because I don't know how we didn't do this. Like now that we're doing it all the time with Copilot, I'm like, how do we go so long without using this technique at scale with adoption previously, right? This self-nomination concept, et cetera. And for me, that's like a relatively new at the scale we're doing it. Like it's pretty much every project. It's really interesting to me because I'm like, looking back, I'm like, so many technology projects could have been better if we took this approach from the beginning. So that's a good example of the kind of learning you get.
All right. Right? So now you may be curious, right? So let's walk through this area. Let's further unpack this team concept. Let's start from the basics. So how would you get this going? So do you do an announcement? Okay, we're going to pilot. Which team would like to do it? And what's the definition of the team? Is it a department? Is it a project team? And then do you task them to come up with use cases? How do you measure? How do you track? So now I really want to understand when you talk about it's effective, what makes it effective and how do you put all this together?
Yeah. So a couple of things there. Like the first thing that we've started to do is you need a way to just register interest, right? So SharePoint list can be fine. Like it doesn't need to be a really complex form. Something that could be a little Microsoft form, something that allows people to say like, I would like to nominate, you know, other people as a team, or I'd like to nominate my team. And the three or more is a good minimum. One of the things we have noticed is like, if you have duals, it could work for some organizations, but we don't generally recommend it because the success criteria is much better with three or more. It kind of curbs people that kind of fake it with one extra person and that other person kind of drops. If you look at usage, right? One person's really using it and they kind of brought someone else along. It's a lot harder when you have a team of people because we talked to them about that. Like one of the things that's really neat is we have all this great usage data on the Copilot dashboard, but now we can target that information continually to those teams of people and say, hey, you know, two of your team members are using it all the time in Outlook, but not all of you guys. Maybe talk about this. You don't even have to tell them what to do, right? Here's all the guidance of whatever. You're just kind of using those highlights. So remember, you're going to use that mechanic later. So that's why three or more is our recommendation. We haven't done limits, but we do find that around 10 or more starts to get, it's not really a team anymore. So, you know, 8 is kind of the perfect number. So between 3 and 8, but it's, you know, that's a mixed thing depending on the customer and the situation. The second thing is when people nominate, you have to ask key questions. So you want to understand like, what is your readiness? Like, how much do you know about this? Have you played with ChatGPT and personal? So you ask some really simple questions that give you a baseline. But this is really helpful if you've ever done persona analysis, right? What we often do is we look at like an understanding of like these collections or rules of types of people. Well, with these team mechanics, what we found is, again, most people, when they nominate, they pick like a cross-functional team that they all work closely together, or they'll pick like a departmental team that they work closely together. So there's a bit of bias already in that, that they know that they have those like quick, high-velocity communication and collaboration channels already open. And by getting this additional context, what we're essentially able to do is, instead of picking like individual stakeholders and saying, this is your role and your focus, we can kind of attribute these informations about these teams of people, which you can imagine we can use in really proactive drip campaigns for emails to inform them, to ask more targeted survey questions as an example, things like that, really powerful techniques. So that's the second thing, is you don't just have them nominate, but you say like, help us understand a little bit where you're coming from and what you want to use it for. And in the what you want to use it for, you really want to see people, and you'd be surprised how many ideas people have that blows like IT away. Like, there's concepts of usage where, you know, IT's like, I don't know if you can do that with Copilot, right? It's a plugin scenario, or it's not really even a, it's more of a power platform solution, right? And so that becomes a really interesting intake funnel for IT to redirect, right, towards the right technology fit, because employees don't know when to use what, right? Like, it's a challenge. We both talked about that extensively. And so this can also be a great way to like funnel people towards the right digital excellence tooling, so that they use the right thing. And what's left is a good collection of people. And we've been surprised, even in smaller or larger organizations, we always get tons of people who nominate. And it's the people you want, because there's a clear expression of interest and commitment. And then it makes it that much easier to also give them like expectations. So I'm going to give you this, but I have to ask, you know, minimum of monthly survey, you know, between your team members, minimum of this, et cetera. And you do that for a period of time. And then once that time period's over, then you, you know, manage it in a more programmatic, natural way. But that allows for a lot of listening. And there's a lot of adaptive learning that IT, especially on the learning and development side, is adapting to like help inform how to use these AI tools. And again, I can't express enough that plugin mechanic. You know, we talk about, you know, Copilot, like you just turn it on and use it, and then there's this change management thing you have to tackle. But actually what we find is the plugins are a really great way to calibrate it. So when you ask like, hey, I'm looking for information about a policy, if we create a really simple policy plugin that looks at a SharePoint site, we're not even talking about connecting to SAP or, you know, SuccessFactors or something else. You're just saying like, hey, here's the data. It's in this location. Copilot, make sure you're looking here first. And then it'll do a pretty good job. Most of the time, you don't even have to pipe all the way down, right? Like, here's the question, here's the answer. You just give it kind of that little bit of more direction with plugins, and it tends to do a much better job of giving people the answers they're looking for. And now we're teaching people how to tune a little bit more. Like, hey, sometimes when you have these types of questions, you could, of course, just ask it, but try using these plugins. And then that journey will, of course, evolve over time. And that's like the IP in the business, right, that you're essentially establishing and scaffolding, right? Where are those opportunities where core functionality, lifting all boats, is not enough? We need to do these more specialized scenarios. And because, oh my God, the plugin studio, even in its current inception, is so easy to use, it becomes quite actionable.
So before you get there, so one thought that came to mind before you start these pilots or these teams using it, what are some of the prep work that you lay down the foundation? So for example, you talk about plugins. Do you have to give IT heads up or train somebody in IT? Second is, you and I know a strong data foundation is critical, right? The last thing you want is somebody prompting Copilot, list all the files that I have access to that has the word password. So that's one of the quick tests I always do, right? And stuff shows up. So how do you prep that before you start doing pilots? I mean, you can't fix everything, but you know, you want to be as diligent as you can.
You can defer a little bit in what we call the POC era. So like, if you're doing like a POC just with IT, you trust IT people, so you can kind of get away with a little bit of risk there. I'm not saying that there isn't risk, it's just a managed risk. Fundamentally, here's what happened, right? Like, we had this big digital first response during the pandemic. We modernized a lot, but everyone has this big security, compliance, and sort of governance, information management, whatever you want to call it, debt. And we just have never paid that. And what happens historically is we'd do like an internet project and we'd pay a debt because we'd optimize our information flow, our navigation structures, et cetera. But in the cloud, you actually find less and less customers are making those investments because you don't have the trigger of a new version of something, like a major upgrade, right? So it's actually exacerbated this issue of debt. And so the thing is if you want to use AI, right, you need to pay and you know, move past that debt and at least modernize key elements of that, like having DLP, having, you know, purview or information management at scale, programmatic modeling for that. You need to do things like that. Oh my God, the shared with everyone link, the mistake every organization has, the default, which I wish wasn't a default, you know, that everyone does that, exposes almost all these things. So, you know, you can take retroactive action to kind of clean up, but you have to solve that problem from occurring again. And that's, you know, obviously AppPoint and other solution vendors help, but you need something to like automate or allow you to scale with that. And the reason I don't always emphasize that with customers is because I'll be frank, most of those projects are pretty straightforward. Everyone kind of knows what to do. They just need like support and staffing and resourcing or just like a little bit of direction on prioritization. But what ends up happening is really is happening is AI is driving such a competitive advantage, you know, 60%, 120% productivity gains. You're seeing like growth in terms of quality gains of 20 to 32%, right, on average. You're seeing really big numbers. And if those things are not happening in your organization, you are at a huge competitive disadvantage, right, in your industry. And so you have to embrace these AI tools, but to do that, you have to pay this tax, right? You have to kind of get those things set up. So that's certainly a big part of it, you know, in the near term. But I think most organizations will have solved a lot of that in just a few months because they'll have figured out a lot of that strategy. And then what comes after that, the longer tail is that change management because it's such a different style of operational approach to rolling out a technology.
For sure. Because even if you think about change management, right? So let's fast forward to everybody using this now. But at the same time, there's some level of expectation setting and really training. For example, prompt engineering. While Gen AI is really good, it's still not like talking to another person. So there are key things we have to teach people about how to engage and prompt and ask questions, right? So is that something you're finding that's critical or you're helping your customers as well?
So we always, even though AI is moving so quickly, we always like to think of things in 3 to 5 year timeframes when we talk about major organizational investments, right? It's just a projection model. So if you take something like prompting, it is absolutely a problem today because you have to do, because it's honestly because of the context length and the quality of the AI agent, right? So what happens is you have only so many characters, for lack of a better term, that you can input. And because of that, you know, if you have really long documents or you have, you know, things you're kind of stitched together from like many sequences, you have to do lots of extra delegation steps. And so prompting and learning prompting and techniques becomes really critical because of this friction created by the design of the models, as well as then the model capability. And both of those challenge points are going to be softened and improved drastically in the coming months, not years, like in the coming months. So the first thing I always highlight to people is please don't invest in like a bunch of prompt engineering, like building your own centers of excellence for prompt design. It's good to champion success stories, like what worked for you, et cetera. That's different. But like prompt stuff, let Microsoft and like the industry do a good job of up-leveling everyone on there because they actually do a really good job of it. I think the prompt libraries Microsoft has built into the product continue to be updated. Every time there's a new feature set that they make available, they add all those prompt, you know, commands. It's not like historically where like the documentation lags. Like it's very, very proactive on the Copilot side. So I think in that way we can soften it. But it brings up a different question, which is what are these new skills we're learning within the organization and that we need to sustain? And I do think that there's 3 problematic areas. Number one is we have to learn when to use AI and when not to. And that has to be scaled at the organizational departments and then down to the individual level. And so that's kind of like the analytical judgment, right? Is this emotional scenario where really need to avoid AI and make it very authentic, you know, very direct, even if it's imperfect, or do we use AI? You know, if it's a customer satisfaction issue, you might use a blend of both, right, as an approach. Another example is this issue of trust but verify, right? So they call it hallucinations more publicly. Microsoft calls it ungrounded. So there's like things that it'll suggest that are ungrounded. There's not evidence to support that. So it has those little reference links, and I'm sure that'll improve over time. There's a bunch of ideas on how they're going to do that. But right now, one of the most important things is to teach people, like, as you ask and have it do analysis and retrieve stuff, you know, you can trust it. I think that's actually important to stress, but you need to verify. And so it's much faster to verify, but you still need to do that action. And so otherwise you can make mistakes and they can be costly mistakes. But I will say it's much cheaper to make those mistakes now than in, you know, several months or years when all this stuff is so integrated in the organization that the consequences of those are, you know, much more spectacular in the you know, the way that one AI issue of someone not verifying could scale and, you know, sprawl, because now more content's created with that misinformation, which is now referenceable. So the verification breaks down. So it's definitely something to like stress at the very beginning, and it's okay to overstress the verification step. And then the third one we see the most is this idea of how do I do really good scaled delegation? So you don't want to be a micromanager, but you're kind of a micromanager with your AI agents, right? And so to your point, I do think that's going to change. We already see it where GPT-4 Turbo, if you have interactions, you know, discussions, it does a better job of context memory. We have memory now. You know, you can imagine that these things are going to come in a responsible way into the enterprise, not far away. We're talking, again, I think months, not years. So as these capabilities start to come in, a lot of these concerns that we have of it like being hyper-personalized, understanding who I am, what my needs are, I think they really will slowly shift more and more outside of the scale. And plugins will be our mix in between. So when we have scaled scenarios for that, the context queuing we can give is plugins, which can do a lot of that prompting for you. You don't need to teach people prompting if you just create a plugin that does some additional prompting, you know, on behalf of the user, as an example.
Well, looking at that scenario, right? So it's a matter of when, not if. Every organization will adopt this, will use this. So for your customers, as they go through this process, as they go through the maturity, if you may, of leveraging AI, what are some of the key phases that you tell them that they'll be doing, they'll be encountering, and how do they continue to move up in the maturation of using this technology?
Hello, Shift Happens podcast listeners. I have an exciting offer for you. Join us for our in-person Shift Happens conference, October 10 to 11 in Washington, D.C. Registration is free. That's right, it's free. And you walk away with actionable strategies from industry leaders and peers to make Shift happen in your digital workplace. Visit shifthappens.to to register today. We'll see you there.
Yeah, I think the first one that we always recommend is Art of the Possible. We often talk about readiness. And look, I'm all for readiness. It makes us money in both sides, vendor and services. But at the end of the day, you know, Art of the Possible is the best thing to start with, right? I think a lot of business leaders, especially, don't fully understand where this technology already is, where it's already delivering value, where it's immediately available if they wanted to turn it on and use it. Even like the free version of Copilot, like not Copilot for Microsoft 365, but like this core, there's tons of stuff organizations aren't using it for, right? And that can be rolled out to everyone without any additional license costs. It's just, you know, the change management stuff. So I do really, really recommend Art of the Possible being front and center. And when I say Art of the Possible, we see three types of Art of the Possible. You get like business contextual ones, so like corporate communications or marketing or whatever, right? Then you get ones that are about Art of the Possible for like all users, like general productivity benefits and meetings management, stuff like that. And then lastly, you get what I would classify as leadership oriented ones, where it's about helping leaders understand how they can lead better. That could be employee engagement. That could be literally how they track and prepare for meetings, like around managing employees. But there's a lot of stuff to unpack under management. So we often classify it under like comms, collab, and management as three like core areas of AI excellence. And those all have an applicable scenario for Art of the Possible. Once you do Art of the Possible, it's readiness, right? Then you get into the technical readiness. You get into, you know, pilot determinations, right? Like who are the right users for all that stuff? Where do we already have some digital excellence we want to take advantage of? Keep in mind, Copilot for Microsoft 365, you know, uses those Microsoft tools. So if you have an audience that only uses two of the, you know, five tools, then you're only getting, you know, starting at a point of 40%, right? So the more we can spread that out, the better. Again, goes back to the questions we ask when we do those team nominations. And then after we get the readiness done, we're doing, I would argue, POC and pilot. Typically, they roll into each other. POC would be like IT department or something like that. And then we would scale that to, because that's kind of locking our security stuff down and making sure we understand it in a individualistic way. And then we scale that into our pilot groups. I like rolling pilots. I'm a big fan of like take 50 to 100 to 200, like keep scaling that way with your own metric system. And pilots, this is another thing, that period I'm describing should be about 6 months. So that's not a normal thing. Like we always do like, oh, let's do 3 months or 2 months, like to do really quick pilots. I'm not saying that you can't do that, but you need to think about it for a longer time scale. because it's a lot of adaptive change. And it could take 2 months for people to just learn how to use it for communication, let alone using it for collaboration and management, right? So kind of theming them, like 2 months of communication, 2 months of collaboration, 2 months of management becomes really helpful. So there's more to talk about there, but piloting is more complex than it seems on the surface. And then that rolling pilot model shifts into what we call the support and sustain. And the support sustain, another big mistake that a lot of organizations make is the way that they fund it. So it's surprising, but if you design the pilot the right way, you're actually establishing almost all of your center of excellence and, you know, the cycle resourcing, all that stuff across the organization. And so you're just scaffolding and facilitating that with little bursts of investment every like 3 to 6 months. And that's fine. There's some customers who are a little bit more aggressive. They're like, oh, we're going to like check every 2 weeks for changes. You don't need to do that. Like every month, every quarter is the absolute like most accelerated schedule. I think every 6 months is fine strategically looking at your whole plan. And that's why I say 6 months is a nice rolling pilot, because you'll do the pilot program and then you'll probably do another pilot program after that. But it'll be totally different workloads and scenarios based on what you've learned. So yeah, definitely there's a pattern there, but you got to think through that whole sequence, right? Not just, you know, the readiness or not just the POCs, like there's multiple pieces there to think about.
So let's take that, right? Let's say, I'm sure throughout that 6 months, especially customers you work with them, you're guiding them, you're watching, helping them iterate. What are some of the really cool positive outcomes that you've seen that's on top of your list? Like, you know, people ask about ROI, what's the ROI? You drop some numbers around productivity, but what are some of the tangible things that, you know, that surfaces all the time?
So as you know, I love numbers. And so one of the things I always first highlight is that the industry itself is getting better at reporting on this stuff. So the best two studies are the MIT and Harvard peer-reviewed studies around experimental evidence for GPT, these GPT 3.5 and then GPT-4. And they talked about working with business documents and they measured that at scale. And so there's some really neat findings. And that's where that 60% productivity on average gain comes from and 20% quality gain. So those two numbers are what I call baseline. That's Copilot, the free version of Copilot. It has the same potentials, the same scenarios that they did with those tools are the same things today you can do with current version of Copilot, right? Image generation, all those other things. So there's a lot that you can do with the free version. Again, I cannot stress it enough. 60% productivity gain, 20% quality gain on average is something you can achieve with no additional licensing investment. On top of that, you get the Copilot for Microsoft 365, which takes that to the next level because it understands the thousands of commands in PowerPoint or Word or Excel that people use to optimize, you know, the information flow, their experiences, et cetera. So what happens, and that continues to enrich. So what happens is it's not just easier because I don't have to do as much copy pasting and just like breaking up of tasks, which is a huge ROI gain for productivity. But when you combine that with the fact that it understands like the tooling and the context of the user, like I'm not going to say, go retrieve this meeting from, you know, Ducks and I just had a meeting. I'm going to say, I just had a meeting and Ducks said, can you remind me like a summary of what he said? And when it does that, it doesn't need me to give it much direction. It does a really great job of remembering. And it might be like a week ago, it'll be like, okay, Ducks, who's that Ducks? When do I have a meeting with Ducks? Okay, it's this meeting that's recorded. I have a transcript. It's doing like 6 or 7 different discrete activities, right? And then returning that result. And that 6 or 7 sequences is all productivity time savings, right? Because those are things I would manually have to go do. So it's stacked, like it's cumulative effect. So what we find on average is around 120% productivity gain when we measure it out, when you use Copilot for Microsoft 365 instead of just Copilot. And then we also see around a 32%. It's not as substantial of a quality gain. Part of that is where Copilot is in its journey. It needs a lot more improvements, but we're seeing like around a 32% quality gain on like documents, like proposal documents, things like that. And so that's really interesting. Like the quality numbers we find are more useful to dig into because the productivity numbers are kind of relatively easy to measure. There's lots of benchmark. Microsoft themselves are doing a great job there. But the quality stuff is where you get business contextual, right? What's that process? What's that sequence and situation that's happening? And how could we measure like either through, you know, elicitation of asking people, you know, getting that qualitative feedback or through quantitative numbers saying like, it took this long, it's now taking this long, or, you know, our customers are rating this, you know, these proposals this much higher. We see those impacts and that, you know, in the short term gives a big competitive advantage to these organizations and the longer term keeps them salient because as their competitors do that, if you're not doing that, you're not keeping up and your quality just is not going to be, think of like creating a proposal. You have to tailor it now to the customer in a much more discreet way. Why? Because you can use AI to do a lot of that. Tell me the AI agent about all this customer context. Now take the stuff I normally would have written my normal standard copy and tweak it for that customer. Like, use AI to do that. That is the stuff your competitors are doing. If you're not doing, you're going to be at a disadvantage. So quality is a really good metric. And then we can talk about collab. Collab scoring and metrics are probably the deepest subject, where it has really significant impacts on how it affects collaboration, where we have these low value collaboration sequences. Like, you and I say, hey, you're amazing at SharePoint, right? And I say, can you help me find a document? And it's very transactional. I'm asking for your help. I'm even having a meeting about it, but really it's one-sided, right? That happens a lot in the organization. It's actually, there's the top five issues everyone has every year. Like, what sucks? Meetings and too many meetings. Like, meetings are inefficient and there's too many. Why? Because we do a lot of this low-value collaboration stuff, right? Copilot directly addresses that. A lot of it becomes self-service, where you don't need to bother other people because the agent can do a lot of that exercise work for you. Remember, its skills keep evolving and improving, so you keep using it for more. And then the secondary thing is, when you have high value collaboration, it's totally different when you use Copilot, because you have Copilot and I have Copilot. And then contextually around the whole meeting, we have a shared Copilot. So we actually have multiple AI agents helping each of us do our tasks. And then when you combine that, like, the impact is exponential. So I think, to be honest, the biggest ROI that we're seeing is in collaboration, but it's the hardest to, like, there's not a lot of industry data, you know. It's something I'm excited for. It's going to be for sure a 2024 thing, where you'll see some really interesting findings.
I mean, this gave me an idea, Rich. Maybe we should put together a paper research sometime next year. So we'd love to collaborate on that. But now this begs the question, right? So we get all these gains on the quality, on productivity and collaboration. What does that mean for the employee? Does that mean they don't have to work as much? Does that mean there's conversation around, well, you can focus on more higher level work, right? You don't have to do mundane things. Does that mean companies don't have to hire as many people, right? So what do all these things mean? And when you talk to customers, what are they thinking about with these gains? How can they benefit from it?
Yeah, I think, you know, we see a few things there, right? For sure, you know, employees, you know, the pizza test, right? You know, instead of lunch or something, would you rather have Copilot? I think Microsoft's doing some clever tactics to try and get those answers. And it keeps getting richer, right? Like, people will want it more and more than anything else. So we know it has an impact, right? What I think we're finding is a few things. Number one, you know, I think it's fair to assume we're going to have what we call an inefficiency of cost transfer. So when you give someone productivity time back, they don't always use it in a perfect way. And I think that's really important to just be honest about when we're talking about technologies like this, because some roles that are over leveraged, like managers, will probably do a better job of transitioning those cost time efficiencies back into something a little bit more beneficial for the company, but not every other role. Obviously, we're talking about roles, not individuals. Population groups will do that as well. So you have to, like, cut those numbers that I'm describing with these things in it. And that's done to get the 120% productivity gains that I'm talking about. So we've already done a lot of those pre-mappings and still get to those really high numbers. The second thing is to understand, you know, it's about communication, collaboration, and management, right? So in those three sequences, you have increased variety, velocity, and volume for all three, right? Like, the amount of communication we do, the amount of collaboration we do, even the amount of digital management since the pandemic, right? Because almost all of us do that, you know, with these interactive sessions like this, it's changed drastically. And so you need new tools to keep up, right? You just can't not do that. So there's actually a really nice dynamic where, I'm not saying there's not resistance to AI, which we can talk about maybe as a separate discussion, but, like, most employees are actually quite embracing, and they want to learn more about AI, and they want to learn better tooling and skills. So you're getting a lot of support across the organization to adapt to these changes. The last thing I'll highlight is, you know, I do have a really strong opinion of this. I do speak with a lot of different leaders, and obviously some of those leaders are in, you know, public sector. Some of those leaders are union leaders, not just always, you know, corporate 101 stuff. And I will say, I think it's really important that organizations look at this as an opportunity to keep their human talent and collaborate with AI, and to maximize the new things they can do, the new potential, the new more creative, the, you know, the new opportunities, and avoid reduction of talent. Because I have seen, you know, for every one replacement opportunity, there's 10 to 20 collaboration opportunities, right? So if you start to reduce your headcount, because you can, right? Like, I mean, if your productivity is higher, what happens is your competitors all increase their productivity, and now you're not as competitive in this new ecosystem. So I think it's very short-sighted, and I'm simplifying a lot here, for a lot of business leaders where they reduce headcount. And I think that that should both encourage employees to feel like there's really good research data that shows 5x return on investment if you focus on collaboration with AI versus replacement. Like, well, everything that I'm describing in the research suggests that what I'm saying is the right path forward. And so if organizations have a longer term focus, they're going to totally advance the things that I'm describing and invest in their employees and their people, and not just in, you know, the processes and some of this automation. So, you know, obviously that's a little different per industry, but I think those are my general high level thoughts on it. And then, you know, we could probably get deeper in like, yeah.
Shift Happens Podcast.
Boy, it's really insightful, Rich, and certainly having, I'm sure you work with lots of customers already. While some customers may just be hearing about Copilot right now, it's this idea of AI, this use of it, you know, and Microsoft providing access to MVPs like us. It's been a few years, right? So I'm really grateful that you're able to not only share your knowledge with your customers, but also with our broad listeners. So before we wrap up, I know we can keep talking here. Are there two or three things that companies seriously considering, Copilot for Microsoft 365, that you would advise them on getting started on the right foot? And what would those be?
Yeah, I think my number one, I'm a roadmap guy. I like strategy. I mean, that's where I spend all my time, is in those executive sessions. And our team does a lot of work to flesh those roadmaps out with customers. But I think a roadmap matters. And what I mean by roadmap is not like an AI roadmap and not like an internet roadmap or whatever, but like an employee experience roadmap. And that employee experience roadmap has the Viva workloads, whichever ones make sense for your organization. It has a Copilot for Microsoft 365. It has these other things blended into that roadmap in a way that shows dependencies and prioritization. I think it's really important because we get fragmented and AI touches everything, right? Every one of the Viva workloads will have AI. Many of them have it already. It's available for free in those workloads. So you don't even need to buy Copilot for Microsoft 365 to use like AI Copilot with Viva Goals, right? It's embedded in the base, not the suite license, by the way, anymore, like the individual licensing. So fresh announcement. So those are really exciting things, because what it means is for a lot of organizations, when we talk about Copilot, again, it's not just Copilot for Microsoft 365. We have Copilot. We have Copilot in Viva. We have Copilot for, and the list goes on and on. Exactly. So that the more you up-level that strategy and the road mapping, the better it's going to be for everyone, because this transformative change that we're talking about is done at a program level, certainly not a project level, optimally. The second thing that I mentioned is these tactics, like team-based modeling, plugins from the very beginning for your pilots, you know, longer durations for pilots, like don't try and jam this in a really short amount of time. It's not going to work well. Those are things that are really good to learn. And my real recommendation there is work with a friend, right? So whether it's a great vendor like AvePoint, who's doing tons of this at scale with customers on the information management side, or it's like a services vendor like us who does a mix of both technical and business consulting stuff, like find people that have done a lot of these. I'll be really candid. This is over 100 transformations we've done with Copilot. And in all of that time with Copilot and AI, I feel like we've learned a ton, and we still, like, there's so much that we still don't know, right? Like, especially in that later stages, right? And customers that are already mature, we're still learning, like, how do you attack and invest, you know, accelerate, optimize? Like, those are things that I don't think anyone has the secret sauce on, even when you've done, you know, like I said, massive numbers of these. And so having that context saves you a lot of time of making the same mistakes. So I would do it with our friend. And my last one is, you know, just ask questions. You know, if you're a business leader and you're not the IT person, but you're hearing a podcast like this, you should say like, hey, I heard some really interesting ideas. I want to say, how are we tackling this? You know, not just do we have an AI policy, but like, how are we really enabling and rolling this out? And people should have clean answers for that. If they don't, you know, point them in the direction of people like us. But like, there should be a lot more of that. You know, how do I frame it? If the business doesn't lead it, it's left in the hands of technologists, right? And AI, you know, the best thing is inside the enterprise, intent is assumed to be positive. Positive intent, you know, is how we work. And I know you talk about that a lot. I think positive intent is so important because almost all the risks with AI are offset if we assume positive intent. In the public space, right? I know election year in the US, public space, it's very different. There is malicious intent. There is other intent that's not positive. And, you know, social media and other tools could have brought people together closer. Similarly, AI can do the same thing, or it can pull people more divisively apart if we're not talking about the enterprise. And so I think, you know, the more we lead these changes, the more people involved in leading the change out of the hands of technologists, as much as I love them, I think the better society will be, and certainly our industries will be. So Yeah, when I say the last point, I really mean there's a lot of depth to that, and I hope that that's the biggest catalyst for people getting more actively involved in either research or learning or piloting these tools within their organization.
And with that, right, that's in the end, that's really the API that we should all work with, assume positive intent. So Rich, this has been really fruitful. For folks who want to connect with you, where's the best place to reach out, connect with you, learn more about what you guys do?
I'm religious about responding on LinkedIn. So if you reach out and message me on LinkedIn, I'm very consistent there. That's the easiest way to get access to me generically. My email, I'll even say it here, it's really easy. It's richard@tutelead.com. So you can just email me. Or to be frank, Tutelead, we publish a lot of stuff. So we have Copilot readiness resources. We have employee experience, like a 100-page white paper on how to think about like Copilot and Viva and things like that and apply it. We're really open with knowledge. So if there's things that I've done with a customer or our team has done with a customer and you reach out, I'm happy to share, even if you're a competitor. The more people are informed, like, I'm serious. I love those discussions because I learn from them. Someone asks an interesting question. I'm like, what, you know, here's the answer. Like, I think, but tell me more about like what drove this. And then a situation I've never encountered is, explained to me. And then later I can find out, how did that go? Right. And what did they learn from that? So, you know, abuse my generosity and our broader generosity at Tutelead, and definitely reach out.
Love it. And that it all comes back full circle, a community. That's what it's all about. So
that's right. That's right.
Thank you, my friend. And as always, it's great to talk to you. And folks, make sure you connect with Richard. Lots of great information, lots of things you can learn. So with that, thank you, everybody. And we'll see you next time here at Shift Happens.
Shift Happens Podcast.
Thanks for listening. AI has the power to provide organizations with a competitive advantage to succeed in today's digital transformation era. However, as Richard highlighted, it's really important to prepare for what AI-powered innovations can offer and be able to discern how and when to use it, and also when not to use it. If you like today's episode, subscribe and leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts. I'll see you next time.
Shift Happens Podcast. Shift Happens Podcast.
Shift Happens Podcast is a production of AvePoint Inc., produced and edited by the AvePoint brand team. Stay up to date on the latest trends in digital workplace transformation by visiting appoint.com.